episode 419 of the Pop Culture Roundtable, the podcast that's one Lauren shy of a full set. In this episode, we talk about Mare of Easton, There Will Be Blood, and the classic movie Shakedown. I'm Andrew Sale.
I'm Lauren Rubin.
And I'm Patrick Hill. So get ready for 33% less entertainment, because it's time to get this thing started.
What's even the point?
Kick things off by going around the table, which is where we talk about something new, fun, and noteworthy about our weeks. Patrick, I'm looking at you because there's no one else to look at.
I know. It is. I mean, it's not. I do like your face. It's just. It's also fun to see other faces.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. Lauren's not here. Just start by saying.
Yeah, I thought that was very clear.
Well, I think so too. Yeah.
Lauren is making the big money right now. Basically, she has so many clients.
She asked us not to say anything, but you want to tell? Do you want to tell them who their client is, or should
all
I?
Right.
Tell them.
Go ahead.
No, because by this point, she'll have already made the announcement. So, I'll tell you what. Just look to Lauren's Facebook and Instagram page on release day for the big announcement.
Thank you. Okay. This week. It's weird because this is like probably one of the least exciting things I could talk about because it's banking, but it does have a design element to it that I got so jazzed about I had to participate with. So when I went to Europe last time, one of my friends, I don't know how I make this an interesting story. I saw their debit card and it was beautiful. It's all I know how to say. It was just a beautiful debit card by this company called Monzo. All right. And Monzo was not available in the U.S. Well, since coming back from Europe, they started their beta in the U.S. to actually also start serving customers here. And there's some great parts with it. It's one of these whole like fully online banks, like think Ally or something like that, where you don't have any ATM fees and there's no overdraft fees. And there's I imagine there's like high yield savings and all that kind of stuff. So they have a lot of good features, but because they're also based out of Europe, then there's some benefits for when you travel for the exchange rate that you get and things like that, you know, that you don't get with other banks.
Like it's like a less variable exchange rate? Like, is that the idea?
They just say there's no markup. It's whatever, like,
I don't know how it works.
I don't do banking. Here's the thing. This isn't even about the exchange rate. The point is I'll travel and I'm sure I'll take advantage of it and I won't know the difference and whatever. It doesn't really matter. But all the app stuff looks really beautiful. All the web stuff looks really beautiful. But the only reason I got this card, other than I hate my current bank and I just needed to get away from my current bank, is this beautiful coral color.
Wait, is that not a MoviePass card?
MoviePass was red. This is like highlighter coral. Mm-hmm. And I think this card is so absolutely beautiful.
It's very pretty. Hold it up closer.
There's no numbers on it, so I can hold up as close as you want me to. All the numbers are on the back. You can't see
them. Yeah, look at that. I didn't want to see the numbers. I just wanted to see like, okay, there's like a there's a spot UV on it too. That's what I was trying to see what it says. It says beta.
Where it says beta, it's got that spot UV there. But otherwise, on the front, it's just this. Again, it's like a highlighter coral. It's so bright in person. Anyway, I'm just so pumped to have this card. The problem I've now run into is that it does not match my wallet at all. Boy. So, like, my wallet looks like garbage with this card in it. So now something's got
to
give.
I know what's got to give. You guys have to have a baby so you can pass it down sooner than you were thinking.
Yeah, I got to get rid of this wallet, man. I'm in deep on this wallet. I got to get rid of it. It's not going to work.
That wallet, the podcast is invested in that wallet. So you can't just up and get rid of it. You either have to auction it off to a podcast listener or pass it down to your next of kin.
You know what? Let's throw this out there. I would be interested to know, not as auctioning, but I can't do that. I was about to say, like, we could run, like, some type of thing as a giveaway to have, like, a one-of-one squatching wallet that is set on my ass. But I'm realizing that, like, I still would want to keep this and give it away. So unless you want to let me formally adopt you, I just can't give away the wallet.
Looking at you, we'll see.
Andrew, quickly, what is your category for this week?
What? Seriously?
Yeah, no, I need to. What's your category for this
week? Okay, so my category for this week, you don't want me to tell you the topic. I'm just telling you like what I rolled.
No, right? Just the category.
Okay. Past movie.
Perfect. So, but before we go to your around the table or yes. across the table,
yeah,
I think we need to talk about the film we saw this week.
Okay.
Because this, honestly, this is like the big culture thing that I did this week. And that was that you and I both went and we saw In the Heights,
mm-hmm.
which is the Lin-Manuel Miranda film. And I'll say, honestly, like, I don't like musicals. I would never say, hey, I got time to watch a movie. I'll find a musical. Would never happen. Okay. But I know McKinsey wanted to go. It was available. Something we could all do. And for being a musical, which I don't like, I can recognize it was really enjoyable. I think that they did enough. Like, even if the music kind of wears on you, because in this type of movie, the music can kind of wear on you over time, where it's just not as interesting because you've heard so many songs and so many songs with similar energy. But they did enough with like with either setting or like graphics, like CGI or illustrative pieces or whatever. They did enough extra on top that you could still have these wow moments, and it didn't ever feel like boring.
Sure,
there was just something to get your attention, and they did an incredible job. Generating empathy for the characters. I mean, there were some very, very touching moments throughout the film. So if you liked Hamilton, you'll for sure like In the Heights. I genuinely believe that. There's also some fun nods in the film to Hamilton, which I, you know, without giving anything away, there are some fun little pieces. There is an after the credit stinger, which we didn't know, and I had to go back and watch on HBO Max because we didn't see it in the theater. But it was a fun watch. All of that said, there's something else that happened in our visit. And Andrew, I would like you to tell the story of what happened during our visit.
Okay. Well, if you haven't seen In the Heights, it is, like Patrick said, it's a colorful celebration of music and energy. And it's really, really well done. There are a handful of moments in the film where it is not loud and energy driven and just loud, right? There's very few moments where it's just quiet. Well, one of those moments, it was a very pointed moment in the film, sort of at the just before the climax, right? Like just pre-climactic.
It's almost like the beginning of the climax,
right? The tension has built throughout the film, like in a normal story, right? The tension has built and it is just getting ready to crest. And so it's at its highest, essentially. And, it was very quiet, like this kind of quiet. And then, about two rows behind us, someone made, for one reason or another, voluntarily or inadvertently, I don't know, the body does what it does. Well, they decided to pass gas in that moment.
Can you please reenact this for us?
Okay, so again, here's the sound in the theater, and then
so ridiculous.
And we did everything we could do to be adults. We did
not
everything
much.
We could do. I think I fell last. I believe McKenzie was the first to fall victim to the sound. And I could hear her chittering away. And then before I heard you, Patrick, I saw out of the side of my eyes your body start to convulse.
I was vibrating up and down. The thing is, I would have much rather just a violent like
explosion,
like cheek flapping thing to happen. Like that would have been easier to recover from And certainly I can deal with smells. I mean, God knows I can deal with smells.
Lord knows. I am fully practiced.
Something about the just very innocent, like someone thought to themselves, I can get this out. Like I can just.
I can eke this one out.
Yeah. That's not much there. And we all knew exactly what it was. Like nobody thought like, oh, I thought it was like a chair moving. Nope. It was a fart sound. It was a fart sound. Yeah. It just was.
It was.
And I started laughing. And the problem is I got embarrassed because I know like this is, I'm doing emotional harm to these people right now. For all I know, this is someone that deals with like IBS. And they just came out of the house after months of quarantine. They finally mustered up the courage to be back in public with their disease. And while they're sitting there, they accidentally farted. And it's terrifying. And this whole row of adults is just laughing and shaking. And here's the problem, too. Not only was it quiet when he did it, or she. We don't know. Or it could be a child.
It's 2021, Patrick.
He, she, them, they. It doesn't matter.
Could be anybody.
Not only was it quiet when it happened, but then we didn't get a song in the film for the next, like, 5 minutes. Then it goes to, like, somebody's office in, like, another serious scene.
Yeah.
So the movie stayed quiet. You have to understand, the music in this film is, like, loud and bombastic, and there's, like, fireworks going off, and, like, people are doing dances with their feet above their head.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, it's, like, the most serious. It might as well be like a courtroom drama or something, but like not at the part where the prosecutor's like yelling really loudly, you know.
It's at the part where the person is contemplating whether or not they should come out about murdering the victim.
And just laughing the whole time. Could not stop laughing. I did not stop laughing. I was like, even like 10 minutes later, I would have like a 2 second burst of laughter.
It was about 3 solid minutes of laughing on my part before I could get my act together.
I almost got up and left. I genuinely almost stood up and walked out of the theater because
that would have made it worse. I would have laughed so hard.
Because I felt so bad about the emotional torment I was causing by laughing that I got really bad anxiety in the moment and I sweat through like all my clothes immediately.
Well, tell people that you after the film explained the cycle that you got into. Tell people about the cycle.
What was the cycle?
Well, you initially laughed because it was funny.
Oh, yeah, okay. Then, okay. Yeah. Well, at first I was laughing because a guy farted, a girl farted. But then I started laughing because of how inopportune the moment was because there was no music. And I started thinking to myself, like, how ridiculous is it that, like, we have this long portion of the movie that they decided not to put a song in, and this dude had to fart right at the beginning of it. So then I was laughing about how ridiculous, like, the whole setup was for this.
Well, yeah, but then you were laughing because we were laughing, and then you were laughing because you were thinking about how the whole thing looked like in, like from an aerial view, like you could see us laughing, and the fact that we continued to laugh then became its own joke. Like seeing and hearing like our bodies shake and the sounds that we were making became its own thing. And eventually you forget why you're laughing in the first place. Like, yeah, what happened?
It was for sure the straw that broke the camel's butt. And then by the end of it, you're just laughing because of how ridiculous the whole situation is. Just the whole situation. So that's
the whole situation.
8 out of 10. I genuinely do not know why. I do not know the conversation that happened with that kid in that moment, by the way. I genuinely do not know the conversation.
Oh, yeah, me either.
The whole thing.
Yeah. In the film, you mean? Yeah. No idea.
Yeah, I'm saying like I need to go back and watch that scene. Because I absolutely do not remember what was happening in that scene.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Okay, what else other than laughing at someone and causing emotional distress? What else did you do this week?
This yesterday was Gravity Falls' 9th anniversary, and so when I realized that I jumped on a project that I started literally years ago, I don't know if you remember me sketching out that skate deck, Patrick.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, well, it is now finished.
Holy cow.
If you can see all the little there we go. So you got Grunkle Stan, you've got Dipper Pines and Mabel Pines, all the way down to Bill Cipher, and then you've got all like the glyphs at the top. So yeah, finish that up.
Rad, dude.
Thank you. Finish that up for Gravity Falls Day. I also, if you go to my Instagram, I made some prints of that painting that I did a couple months ago of the Mystery Shack. Several people had asked if I would do any prints of that. So very, very inexpensive prints. If you want one, head over to my Instagram and just hit me up in the DMs and I can sell you one of those. Yeah, so I was excited because Gravity Falls is such a fantastic show, and the animation style, the character design is all just amazing. And the more I dive into it, the more I realize how smart it is. Like, they were so forward-thinking, even on the very first episode, they knew how the story was going to pull itself through, and there's lots of hidden little Easter eggs all throughout the series, and so you can literally go back and watch it multiple times all the way through and find something new and fun to pick up on just about every time you watch. And so, yeah, Gravity Falls, if you haven't watched it. And if you want to see the skate deck, just head over to my Instagram. It's on from yesterday's post. Okay, I think that's it. I mean, you talked about some of the other stuff. I did watch a show. I did watch the show called The Challenge. Started it yeah. with you guys, and then I did finally finish watching it. I hate how much I love that show. Like, legit, like I hate, because it's primarily just a drama. It feels like a teenage drama, even though these people are in their 30s and some of them in their 40s.
What's interesting is that, like, because when The Challenge first came on, it was like, how can we get a bunch of still teenagers or barely not 20, teenagers?
Yeah, 20-somethings, yeah.
And get them to like the girls to compete in mud baths, and very let's create drama and let's over sexualize and it was an MTV show, right. it's what you would expect.
It is what it is, right.
And at some point they started growing up the competition and deciding, like, okay, let's get more and more physical, like we want stuff to actually be difficult to do, and let's take out this over sexualized bit and let's focus more on the physical aspect and this and that. But they never grew out of the drama. So, like, the drama is still a part of it, even though a lot of the competition is pretty respectable competition once you get into later seasons. You need to get to, like, 30 and beyond in the seasons.
Yeah.
Which, unfortunately, on Paramount Plus, they only have, like, 4 seasons because, for whatever reason, they just don't have a full catalog on that side. But,
well,
yeah.
I think I watched the latest one, right? That's the one that we watched together.
Yeah, okay. Which was War of the Worlds.
World of Worlds.
Is like the late 34, I think. It's the last one they have on Paramount Plus.
To give an idea of what the challenges are, the final challenge, there were, I believe, 6 or 7 people, maybe even 8, when they started the challenge, in the final challenge. And it was a 2-day challenge, 2 days. The first day, they started in the desert, in the middle of the day, and had to do 24 miles of running, biking, and these these challenges inside of that. In
like
the
mini games
yeah. In the first day. That's 24 miles. The next day they had to do, and then they slept. They literally gave them IV bags after half of them dropped out. Literally, some of them passed out and couldn't continue. And then there were 4 or 5 left for the second day, but overnight they slept in these chairs in the back of this metal truck with no heat in the desert, wrapped up in their blankets to try to stay cool, or to try to stay warm. And they had IV bags hooked up to them to give them nourishment because they were so depleted after the first day. The next day they had 26 miles of trekking to do up sand dunes, through this they had to canoe or like kayak or something across, and then an all out like a mile long sprint to the end to try to finish. So when you talk about like a challenge, I've never seen anything like this. American Ninja Warrior, nothing. In fact, an American Ninja Warrior was on this season. Yeah, and she made it to the finals. She was one of the final four, but she didn't win. Like American Ninja Warrior, American Gladiators, some of these shows that you think are like the ultimate kind of whatever, this blows all of that away. Like it's relentless, but it's so intriguing to watch. Intriguing.
The earlier seasons aren't nearly as physical. So if you really want to see people like have to push boundaries, that the later seasons I feel like are where it's at. But you do have to wade through the drama. And for some people, that's fun. Some people get into that. I'm fine to like fast forward through it and just get to the next challenge. I just think that the actual challenges they do are fascinating.
Challenges are crazy. It's crazy. So
yeah.
So that's what I did as well this week, besides drawing Gravity Falls stuff. All right. Let's just transition straight over into our master categories. What do you say?
Do it.
Here we go. The master categories each week are when we talk about the dice we rolled the week before that give us our categories. Then we pick our topics based on those categories. I'm excited to hear about yours, Patrick, and we're going to end with mine because I have a bit of a, it's not a game, but it's just kind of a back and forth to see like a checklist. So why don't you start us off?
So in this Human Centipede, I'll be the mouth. Yes. Okay, so
I'll come up the rear.
Oh, man. all right, so I have current TV, and there's really, in fairness, I haven't been watching a lot of current TV. I have a list of shows I know I should watch, like Lupin or Loki, a lot of L shows. We've talked about Hacks, I think is the name of it. There's a lot of shows that I should be watching right now, but there's only two I have seen episodes of. One I've seen is Girls 5 Eva, which I'm going to very briefly touch on. It's not even going to make the show notes this episode, but I do want to quickly complain about it. But then I'm going to transition to my real topic, which is the Mayor of Easton. For Girls 5 Eva, so this is the show that's by Tina Fey, and it's got a lot of people that you would probably know. One of my favorite is Paula Pell. She actually is in AP Bio. She plays the secretary in AP Bio. I think she's hilarious in that. But I also think she's just a fantastic comedic actress. But Renee Lee Goldsberry, Sarah Bareilles, who, by the way, singer. Is insanely talented.
Yeah.
Busy Phillips. And so there's great people in this, but this is produced by Tina Fey. And it's about a one-hit wonder girl band, right? Think to the times of, like, the 90s boy band, girl band era, right? Mm-hmm. It's a one-hit wonder girl group, and they're kind of, like, reuniting, trying to take one more shot at making it big. And there was a lot of talk around this because of Tina Fey and because of the people involved. And in fairness, from a critic standpoint, it's done very, very well critically. I mean, it gets pretty high reviews, but I think this show is an absolute mess. I think the humor, it's so predictable. Like all the setups, the punches, there you just know what's gonna happen. There's nothing that's some people and maybe this humor I'm into. Some people do a really good job about setting a joke in a joke. Like they set it up in such a way that you feel you know the punchline and they subvert your expectations and then that hits even harder, right? And there's a really big craft to that style of humor. And I would say that a lot of the comedians that are doing really well now, that's the way that they approach their joke. So every joke is really like a double. It's the joke you think they're gonna make, which is one step beyond the like dangling fruit. But then there's the joke they actually make. So it ends up being like three layers deep. And unfortunately, this show ends up being the low-hanging fruit or the joke that you think they'll make. That's what happens. And so because of that, I don't find it particularly funny. When you talk about someone like Paula Pell, when you see her in AP Bio, she's a bit over the top. But because other actors and actresses in that show play so level, it doesn't throw everything out of balance, right? You need to have kind of these normal level characters to give enough space for the crazy characters to stay anchored. So to have room to work, but also be anchored. This is one of those shows that I feel like just tips a little bit too much into the zany side. So anyway, I'll stop talking about it. Again, it's got great reviews if you want to check it out. Girls 5 Eva, I'm just not a fan of it all. I don't recommend it. There's my little rant real quick about that I had to get in. By the way, my wife loves this show. Mm-hmm. She loves this show. All right, but the one I want to talk about actually is Mayor of Easton. And I'll keep this similarly as short because I don't want to give anything away. So this is a show with Kate Winslet. She plays the lead, and she's the detective in this small Pennsylvania town. Now, when it's one of these towns where everybody knows everybody. Nobody ever leaves, right? So everybody went to high school together. You know, she's known for... She shot that one great shot in that basketball game one time, and so everybody remembers her for that shot, right? And now she's the detective in this town. And unfortunately, a girl gets murdered, and the way this show... And so it's a whodunit. It's figuring out who actually, who was involved in the murder of this girl and in solving that mystery. What's interesting is the writer of this film, it's partially based off his life and relationships in his life and things like that. But B, he said his goal was to say, okay, if you have this small town, this town where everybody knows everybody, kind of knows their business, they're very, very tight-knit, everybody looks out for everybody type environment, what crime would cause the most chaos? Like, what thing could happen that would, like, most deeply rip that apart? And that's how he approached this topic in this show. So the look of the show apparently is a very Easttown PA, Easton PA. I don't know if that's true, but this is my fact I love about the show. The person that did the costume design actually went to a Wawa, which is a gas station, and just stayed in a Wawa and took pictures of people that were coming in and out and used that as inspiration to build all the outfits for all the characters in the show.
That's an interesting... I mean, get inspiration wherever you find it, right? Makes sense to me.
Yeah. So apparently heavily influenced by Wawa. But so watching the show, like, the goal... in fact, the hairstylist was told that she basically was supposed to give everybody bedhead. So it's everybody's very muted. Nobody's done up. It's very casual clothes. Again, it looks like you're standing in a Wawa. And that's the appearance everybody brings. The dialogue is fairly, I don't know if muted is the word I'm looking for, but it feels very rooted in reality. And that's the goal. The goal isn't to sensationalize anything. The goal is to introduce you to a cast of characters. And there are a lot of characters, even though a lot of them are fairly mundane, but to introduce you to a cast of people, that way when you finally get to the end and understand what happened, you can really see the ripple of pain and hurt in all the different facets that it affects, right? And because there's so many people involved, every episode is basically continuing to introduce you to more relationships, more connections, more relationships, more connections. It's nobody feels very prominent in the show beyond like Kate Winslet and her immediate family. For the most part, even though there are a lot of characters, it feels a bit like a revolving door. Like, you'll see people again, but it's not one of those shows that you can point to and go, oh, that's who did it. And it's not one of those shows that where you can say, I don't know that they did it, but I can tell they're prominent. You just can't. The way people are introduced, when they're introduced, the way people are talked about and brought back in, I guarantee you that your expectations will be subverted through watching this show. But ultimately, the way it wraps up will make sense. It is a very affecting show because of some of the topics it deals with. I mean, it's dealing with Kate Winslet, who had a child commit suicide. And so she's investigating this murder of a child that was killed. And so there are some parallels that are, you know, a parents losing a child, obviously, is a very big part of this show. But then, of course, the way families can get pulled apart because of major situations like that, life-altering situations, and then ultimately how communities can be altered by them. So it's very heavy material, and ultimately, like, there are some very emotional moments in the show. But all the acting, the performances, the dialogue, everything is just very, very beautifully done. And the other thing I want to point out is that Evan Peters is in this show. Evan Peters, if you remember, plays Quicksilver. He was also in WandaVision. We talked a lot about his character in WandaVision. But he plays
a huge role in all of the American Horror Story series.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But he's just an actor that I love. And the role that he played, we've seen his very, in the case of, like, if you know him from either WandaVision or you know him from the DC side, it's a very snarky, fun, sarcastic person. But in the role he's in here, he plays a detective. He plays a very serious role, a very dramatic role. And he has some incredible moments of acting that are absolutely worth watching just to see those moments with him.
He plays several characters like that throughout the years on American Horror Story, where he's definitely not the fun loving whatever, you know, like that character, the Quicksilvery kind of character. So
sure,
you might like American Horror Story for that reason if you're a big fan of him, because there's some seasons where he is a prominent place in the casting.
You'll remember I watched season one with you,
mm-hmm.
Way back in the day when it was airing.
Yeah,
and then I haven't watched it since. But anyway, Mare of Easton. As far as a rating, I mean, this would be a nine out of ten show for me. I think it's very, very good. It's on HBO Max, so check it out there. It's a show that you're gonna binge. So just know that within two evenings you're gonna blow through it. But it is a very good show, and it is a show I would urge you to pay attention to. Again, because you're not getting a lot of really obvious cues, which you might get in other movies or other TV shows, it's a show that you really have to pay attention to because there is nuance, and what you run the risk of is getting to the end and going, who's that? And that's not, why is that important? And not understanding what just transpired. So it's a show that if you pay attention to, it's a very beautiful, very affecting show, and if you don't pay attention to, then you may think you don't like it. So that's just a note for you. But yeah, Mare of Easton. So
okay, well then we'll go from the small screen to the big screen, back to the small screen because I watched this on my TV. So I rolled, like I said earlier in this episode, I rolled past movie. I'm taking this opportunity to talk about a movie that I just watched that you would argue like everyone should have seen by now. And that has kind of jumped into part of what my topic is, but I'm going to talk about There Will Be Blood. I just watched this movie for the first time like 2 weeks ago, I think. And it's been a minute since this movie's been out, and it's been quoted, and it's been like in the pop culture zeitgeist for well over a decade at this point, and I had never seen it. So this is the movie by Paul Thomas Anderson, written and directed by Paul Thomas Anderson. He also did movies like Punch Drunk Love, Boogie Nights, Inherent Vice. None of those movies have I seen either, by the way.
Really?
Yeah, never seen them. Never saw Boogie Nights. But
in fairness, I think you've seen the best of them. I hate to say that. I've seen all of the films you've named, and I'm actually not a very big fan of a lot of his films, but I deeply like There Will Be Blood.
Yeah. So this movie stars Daniel Day-Lewis so I've seen Daniel Day-Lewis, you know, several times throughout the years in movies and things. I thought he was phenomenal in Lincoln. I thought he killed it in Lincoln. And I didn't think there would be a movie that he could be better at. Well, this movie, I think he's at least as good in There Will Be Blood. He plays the character Daniel Plainview, and I'm an old man. And that is his pitch as he goes across goes out west and it's right at the peak of like the Western Revolution, where they're trying to industrialize, where they're tapping into oil underneath all of these reservoirs that are under these, you know, these people's land out in these small towns all throughout, you know, a burgeoning America is what this is. And so he goes out there with his son, and I'm doing air quotes for his son, because his son is actually, he just kind of adopted, unofficially adopted one of his coworkers who ended up dying in the oil field. He ended up adopting this son and bringing it along with him, not necessarily because he loved him, but because he was good for business, because he would bring his son along with him, and he was his business partner. It helped. It's kind of like when you bring a baby to a park, and the idea that, like, oh, all the women come and see the guy who has the baby. It's like that. And so he's using this child as part of his business strategy to diversify and grow his business. Anyway, it's a long-winded movie. There's lots going on in it in way of development, both literally and metaphorically, I guess. But in terms of, like, the scope of the movie, the scope is very, very small. You are really focusing in on one person and how they go about their life. And you see his life. You see Daniel Plainview's life span over decades, to the point where his son is now in his 30s or whatever. And so we're seeing him over many, many decades as he becomes a successful business and oil man and all of these things. I don't want to get into the movie, like, because I'm sure 99% of the people listening to this podcast have seen it. But I watched it, and I actually really loved it. I thought it was great. The whole concept of I drink your milkshake, I drink it up, like that whole thing. I had heard that so many times, had no idea where it was from. And now, within the context of the movie, totally Ooh. Makes sense. That is a crazy scene.
That scene is, of scenes that, like, stand out to me in films, that is gotta be on a top list for most affecting and just most memorable scenes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, so what's his name? I'm blanking on the other actor's name who does
Paul Dano.
Is that who does the other character in that scene?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, he plays the twin. That character, because right?
Yeah, he plays Paul and Eli Sunday. But yeah, Paul that's Dano. Yes, that's who he's talking to. Yes.
He does great in that movie too. Like, so, like, you hate him. And this movie is a movie that really is not about. It doesn't have a hero. It doesn't have a villain. Everybody seems to be an anti-hero in this movie. Nobody seems to have perfect moral compass or be perfectly in line with something. You're never rooting for one person the entire time. It's back and forth almost the entire movie. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, it's
You're not rooting for Daniel Plainview for the whole movie. You're not rooting for the town priest throughout the whole movie. There's times where you do and times where you realize, oh, this everyone's just a little messed up in this movie.
But it's also, in some ways, it's one of those movies that ultimately everybody shows their true colors.
That's what I mean.
And maybe everybody was who you thought they were.
Yeah, that's right? Yeah, that's kind of like, what I mean. So you won't be rooting for any one person, I think, throughout this movie. It goes back and forth. All of that to say, so that's kind of where I give this movie maybe, for my personal taste, maybe an 8 out of 10. It felt a little long, but I thought that there was a lot of really, really meaty depth in the movie, which I thought was great, considering the scope was so small in terms of, like, what was actually happening. But that's not really what I want to talk about. What I want to talk about is, when I started thinking about this, I thought about movies that everyone, quote unquote, is supposed to have seen. And I know that there are several that I haven't. So I looked up a chart, a list. I'm going to just go through through 20 of them. Okay. This isn't the whole chart.
But what's the name of this list?
Well, the list is called 37 of the best classic movies of all time.
Okay.
All right. So these are movies that are classic. So I had past. So a lot of these are going to be more classic film pre-millennia classic films. And so I'm just going to see between the two of us how many of these have we seen. So I'm just going to go through them. All right. The first one that I want to or that they bring up on the list.
I expect I'm going to do very bad at this.
I thought so, too.
Because you said the word classic. Yeah. But go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. The first on the list is one that I think you have seen this one. But it seems like it's an easy one to start us off, and it's The Wizard of Oz.
I saw The Wizard of Oz when I was a child.
Okay.
So it's one of those movies that I don't remember very well because it's something you kind of watch because you're set in a living room and your parent turns it on.
1939 is when The Wizard of Oz came out. Did you know that?
Yeah. That's, no, I did not know that.
That
but
is
it's old.
Wildly old. I have for sure seen The Wizard of Oz. Okay, number two, Gone with the Wind?
No. I know the... It's like anything else. I know famous lines from it, but no, I've not seen Gone with the Wind.
I have for sure seen Gone with the Wind. I've watched this movie several times, including the intermission. We had like the VHS box set that was two VHSs. VHSI? What's the plural of VHS? Is it just VHS?
It's called a flock.
Oh, okay, a flock. Then that was 1939 is Gone with the Wind. 1942, we get Casablanca.
By the way, fun fact, didn't Gone with the Wind play in theaters for 4 years?
Maybe.
I'm going to look that up, but no, have not seen Casablanca.
I've never seen Casablanca. That's not true. I have seen most of Casablanca. I have not finished Casablanca.
I looked up Gone with a Wand. That's not the same movie.
And if you... just bookmark that page, though, for later. Just for later. And if you're one of the people who calls it Casablanca, you're doing life wrong. All right. The next one is Breakfast at Tiffany's, 1961.
I have seen Breakfast at Tiffany's, and I didn't. So I was dating a girl at the time who said that was her favorite film, and I watched it, and I thought, like, oh, she really did want to go to Tiffany's. I guess I didn't get it a bit, and I was kind of bored by the whole movie. I just watched it to talk to a girl.
I've never seen this movie because I never wanted to talk to a girl. So,
oh, okay, fair.
Yeah, no Breakfast at Tiffany's. Lawrence of Arabia, 1962. This is like a classic, classic.
No, I have not, and I know that's like arguably one of the greatest films of all time.
I know,
and
it is. It surely is on the AFI top 100. It's Peter O'Toole. And I've never seen it. I've never seen it. I couldn't tell you anything about it. Okay, West Side Story, 1961.
Nope.
Wow, I have seen West Side Story. I have seen that. Citizen Kane.
I've not seen Citizen Kane.
Me either. And that is one of the quintessential movie buff movies.
Sure, and partly also because of the filmmaking techniques they pioneered during the film. So there's things with like drop-in lighting and things like that they were the first to do, which was a very big deal as well. So,
well, it's widely known as having the title of best film ever made, and neither one of us have ever seen it.
Yeah.
So maybe it's something worth a watch. Psycho, 1960.
I have Alfred Hitchcock. I have seen it for a while, and they'll look at him and say he wouldn't even hurt that fly.
Yes, of course I've seen Psycho. I love that movie.
I just wanted to see a naked girl in the shower. That tells you roughly what age I was when I saw Psycho.
Yeah, 31. Okay. 1939, we have the film called The Women.
Let me check.
I've never heard of this film.
I don't think I've heard of it either.
Okay.
I've seen films with women, for sure.
And complicated female intimacies. This is what the description of it is.
Oh, this film was remade.
The Women?
Yes, I believe it. I think it was remade in the last decade or 12 years or so, but no, I have not seen it.
Okay. I haven't either. Laura, 1944. That's another one I haven't heard of.
Have not seen it.
Okay.
This is not looking good.
The Best Years of Our Lives, 1946.
See, the problem is you said classics. I've only seen films after 1995.
I've only seen films that star Shaq.
Or Will Smith. All right, go ahead.
I also haven't seen that one. Rebel Without a Cause. James Dean. That's like iconic Hollywood. You've seen this image of the red like track jacketed not a track jacket, but like the zipped up where he's leaning and he's got the bouffant hair. Seen it a million times. Never seen this movie.
Yeah, never seen
the film. 1955. Hi. Okay. The Godfather.
Yes.
1972.
Seen all the Godfathers.
I've seen the first Godfather. I've not seen the other two, which I've heard are better.
Yep.
All right. So the Godfather.
It's a bit like watching a movie like Casino, although I think Casino's like longer. Whereas like they're films that I feel like unless you watch multiple times, you vaguely or broadly remember them as being good, but you can't really point out much about the film. Like it's kind of an overwhelming thing to watch. It was for me. So I've seen all the Godfather films, but I would need to watch multiple times to have any sort of like recollection beyond I enjoyed it.
You won't be writing any commentary for documentaries on
it. I probably shouldn't.
Some Like It Hot, 1959.
Maybe actually.
I've seen the play that is based on this movie. And I can't remember what it's called now.
No, I haven't seen Some Like It Hot. I've seen 7 Year Itch with Marilyn Monroe, but not Some Like It Hot.
Okay. It's considered to be one of the funniest movies of the 20th century. So we should maybe.
Oh yeah, I'd be down for
look
that.
It up. Yeah. All right. It Happened One Night, 1934. You got another Rhett Butler movie, or not Rhett Butler? That's his character's name in Gone with the Wind. Clark Gable.
Clark Gable.
This is another Clark Gable movie.
Actually, I have seen It Happen One Night.
Okay. All right. Is it a different version?
No, I saw it. I saw it with my wife and mother-in-law, actually. It's one of her films that she really loves, and so we watched it together.
I saw the remake of this movie. I Know What You Did Last Summer. All right. 1959, North by Northwest. Got some old Cary Grant.
I have not seen North by Northwest. Movie?
North by Northwest. I have seen this movie. It's another Alfred Hitchcock movie. Kind of most notably known for the crop plane that chases him through a field that gets like eerily close to him. Yeah, I have seen this movie. It's good. I like Alfred Hitchcock stuff, though, generally speaking.
I had an Alfred. Okay. Someone gave me a Alfred Hitchcock box set of all his films, and I gave it away.
Did you give it to Spencer?
I think I did.
Or did Spencer give it
to
you?
See, the problem is it's one or the other. I'm not confident enough to say which direction that went. I can tell you it's not in my possession.
I can tell you, too, that if Spencer is listening to this episode, he is just rolling his eyes at how few of these movies we've seen.
He turned it off after the fifth. I haven't seen it, I promise you.
I know. Okay, 1939, Stagecoach. I've heard of this movie. I've never seen it, though.
Never seen
it? It's like a classic, like, Western. It's known as one of the definitive Westerns by John Ford. Never seen it. Singing in the Rain, 1952.
I have seen Singing in the Rain.
Okay. This is Gene Kelly, like, classic. I'm singing in the rain, just singing.
I'm pretty sure I watched this
rain.
With my mother, but yes, I've seen
what
it.
What a glorious feeling, I'm happy again.
Is this all a setup so you could sing that?
I could not. I have been trying to get this movie incorporated into the podcast since 2018. It's been the long game. I remember most about this film? It's funny what I remember most about this film is a scene that's not even in the movie. It's the plane scene from Casablanca when he says looks like getting on that plane, maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but someday. It's because I remember the scene of I'm Singing in the Rain from the great movie ride from MGM Studios before it became Hollywood Studios at Disney. And those two scenes are very close to one another. And so I remember them as being this one thing, but it's not. They're different movies. But I have seen Singing in the Rain, all that to say. Okay, and then two more. 12 Angry Men, 1957.
So, okay, 12 Angry Men happens. It's a one-room yes. movie, right?
It's a one-room, one-shot or two-shot movie.
And it's 12 people that are, debating. They're the jurors on a trial.
It's the jurors. Yep. It's a hung jury.
It's supposed to be amazing. I deeply want to see this, and I have not seen it. But like, we talk about films. We talk about, oh, we should watch this, we should watch that. This is actually one that I deeply want to see that I'm very aware of, but I have not seen before.
This movie is fantastic. It's great. Like, it's one of those movies that allows you to sit in the uncomfortability. And because I know you personally and how you are in certain social settings where, like, you have higher anxiety in certain settings, I imagine this movie will, like blissfully allow you to cringe, like, throughout it, because you're putting yourself in the situation where you're sitting in a room with 11 other people and you disagree with all of them, or you agree with 10 of them and one guy disagrees and you're watching the tension build. Like, I can just see you in this movie. There's no frills. It's all just straight acting, and it's phenomenal. I love this movie. And then the final one is 1965, The Sound of Music.
I was hoping you were going to say, like, Space Jam.
1995's The Space Jam.
Again, that's when I started paying attention to movies. I mean, I've seen The Sound of Music, of course, when I was younger. We watched it a lot. That's one of those films that my mom really enjoyed. And then also my sisters really enjoyed. So it just got put on over and over and over. We had the VHS of it. I could probably sing more songs than I realized I could sing, like if I heard them mm-hmm. start.
I'm singing in the rain.
I remember being like a bit confused about the pacing of the film as a kid, because it felt like some of the Nazi stuff happened like really quickly at the end. I was like the last.
Well, it came at a time when you were only allowed to show only 23% of the film could have Nazi propaganda. And so they really had to cram it in. It was.
I don't think you're being serious.
But that sounds like that could be right, though.
Sounds like it could be right. I remember just being confused by the pacing. I thought we were just hanging out with children in a mansion, and then all of a sudden it's like stuff gets really serious. And yes. As a kid, I didn't understand why or who or what, but some of the songs were fun.
Yeah.
My most memorable part was the good night from like a top the balcony or whatever.
Wait, was this whole thing just a setup so you could sing that?
Wasn't it beautiful?
Okay.
The problem is, I'm telling you, like, when I decided I liked movies, then from that moment forward, I've watched an S ton of movies. But yes. I've never gone back to watch classic films.
A mayor of S ton movies?
Yeah. I've just never gone back to watch classic films, and that's a... I'm sure that it would, if I would take the time to do that, I'm sure it would bring a lot more meaning and understanding to modern filmmakers as well.
Yeah.
You know, like when we talk about someone like a Paul Thomas Anderson, I imagine there are a lot of pieces of his films that have callbacks and references or build upon other ideas that you could draw from. And again, through that, build more context or meaning to what's going on. And I understand that I just don't have that underpinning. So
two things. One, every time I read or hear about or someone says Paul Thomas Anderson, I immediately think of Zach Morris from Saved by the Bell. But his name is very similar. That's not a weird thing. But the other thing is, I think this summer, Patrick, we should just get like a 5 or 6 movie watch list, like a summer movie list, and we just need to get together and do some of these, knock some of these off of the list.
Because let's do it.
Like we need to watch some of them. Who is it? It's Paul Thomas something. Zach Morris. Mark Paul Gosselaar.
I told you his name was just Zach Morris.
It was practically the same. Okay, well, that's it for my category. I thought it would be fun to kind of to jaunt down the classic film road, and let us know in the Slack channel, the Slack movie discussion channel, some of the movies that you think need to be on that list. We don't need an exhaustive list, everybody. Just give us like one or two. Like, we don't need you just to say, oh, these are all of the movies I've ever seen that you should be watching. But give us like one or two, right? That's a fair
preferably
ask, right?
From after 1995.
No, we're not putting the 1995 stipulation on it. If you haven't seen Metropolitan, or not Metropolitan, Metropolis, that's one that I saw, and I don't know that I'm glad that I saw it. It was like a 3-hour silent film. It was crazy. Drop it in the Slack channel. I think that's going to be it for this episode, though. So if you're missing Lauren, she'll be back next week, and we're going to have a good time. So just be ready for that. But you can find show notes and links to the stuff that we talked about over at mof1.network. While you're there, you can find a whole plethora, cornucopia, if you will, of episodes from throughout the years. You can check those out. You can also buy some stuff. You can listen to some stuff. You can watch some stuff. There's lots of things. Just it's all there. You can support the show on Patreon. If you do, you get extra stuff. This episode, you get some extra stuff. You get some extra stuff.
Andrew's not proud of what you get, but you get stuff. By the way, we do have a new patron.
We do have a new patron. That's right. Who is our new patron, Patrick?
That's right. Our new patron is Mr. or Mrs. Aiden Corrigan.
Thank you, Aiden, for being awesome and contributing. So Aiden gets to hear all the extra stuff that's in this episode.
Oh, maybe we should cut it out. I just don't know.
I think we just really got to follow our heart and give the people what we promised them, what I would say. This is a peek.
You
want
to hear a crazy story?
I would love to.
Group of guys podcasting up in the old Kanata. They're some construction podcast, and they did a segment where they talked about catcalling women. Mm-hmm. And, naturally, people banter. When they banter, they say things in maybe with too much levity. Or also, you could argue with maybe a little bit too much truth.
Okay.
And a woman who's a owner of a construction company, because they were making comments about catcalling, and I would have done blah blah blah, you know. So a woman called them out on social media for it being like sexist and inappropriate and this and that, and then they turned around and sued her for defamation for like $10 million.
Whoa. Then we should leave all the stuff that we say in our episodes.
And again, Canada's laws are probably a bit different. They did end up dropping the suit, but not before filing it. So I guess,
man.
I don't know what the lesson is.
There's one there. We can sift through it on a later date.
Sounds
we'll
good.
We'll do it off air. The patrons will find out before anyone else what we decide on that. But find us on social media. Just search mof1 podcast on all the different platforms. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/mof1podcast and over on our YouTube channel, where you can find other shows that are part of the network, like Dungeons and Designers and The Drawing Board with Doc Reed. There's stuff. There's content that we're putting out week in and week out. So check it all out. But for now, we're going to get out of this episode. I'm Andrew.
I'm Patrick.
Until next time, peace out.
Get out of here, you scoundrels.